Chapter 16.
Ulanor, Gorkagrod, Inner Palace. The Cartalith still floated on Corlan's helm display. The icon representing his present coordinates was a heartbleed of gold, 9/10 of the way down a zigzagging stair that had multiplied the descent by a factor of 20 or more. Orc design. 2 hours and they were still to breach the throne room, but they were close. A double stream of mass-reactive shells burned from his storm bolter ripped open the drab blue and black chestplate of an orc twice his weight in muscle and strobed monstrous horned shadows along the walls. Dark gore splattered Corlan's lenses. In Tri-D, it was as though the palace schematic ran with blood.
"One more turn, and we're there!"
he called out to the kill team and the others, his breathing remaining slow and deep even after 2 hours of intense hand-to-hand combat. Blocks of screed and infographics reporting on his armor's combat systems made fluid passes across his faceplate, kept in constant motion by the targeting reticules that pushed them aside to keep his vision uncluttered. Battery reserves low, ammunition nearly depleted, armor compromised. No matter, they were almost there. Beaumond was already at the turn of the stair, surrounded by hulking orcs that hacked at him with chain axes and powered maces. Fend, fend, strike and push forward. Nigh invincibility allied to earth-shattering moments of power, the timeless fighting style of the Cataphracti. Tyrus was just behind him, firing muffled rounds of Stalker variant ammunition into the densely packed mob. Gadriel and Ice Grip fought hand-to-hand, servo arm and frost blade, smiting and hacking. The Ultramarines Simias and Straton, replacements for Numines and Vega, fallen on Incus Maximal, were a step behind, firing from the chest. Brock had an orc by the throat, 10 centimeters off the ground and turning blue. His bicep was a swollen mass of veins and anger, face creased by gun shadow, caught in a rictus of hatred for the alien. Olug's Ripper gun brought thunder into the confined space, spraying out bullets until the robust weapon clicked empty. The maddened Ogryn took the gun two-handed and clubbed the closest orc to the ground with it. In his fury, Corlan saw the common thread that ran through every member of his squad, man, woman, abhuman, space marine. One emperor, one imperium, one mankind.
"Could you please avoid killing so many?" said Laurentis, modulating his voice to a whining pitch that Ogryn's and bolt of fire could not reach. "The weapon requires live veridi to serve as detonators."
Krul rolled his eyes, artfully massaging the selector of a palm-sized executor pistol. Bolt rounds shattered the weak joints between armor plates, needle kill shots punctured dense green hide.
"There are plenty more, Magos," said Corland.
Asger's panting chuckle returned through the shared feed, along with a crack of lightning.
"Take the stairs,"
Corland bellowed, punching his sword's blued edge through an orc's chest plate and forcing another step towards Beaumond and the others before more orcs stepped up to stop him. He snarled. Spotting the shift in his tactical display, Corlan glanced left as Cavalinera broke from the rest of her sisters. The women fought in uncanny unison to defend the bound orc psyker. The servitors, dragging it along between them, were mammoth but ill-suited to combat, though more than a few stray shots bound for the orc psyker smacked into vat-grown plasti-reinforced flesh. Dravina and the other sisters adapted their blade routines to Cavalinera's absence smoothly. The Night Abyssal veered towards the handrail on the left-hand side of the stair and vaulted over it. Corlan saw the parchment strips affixed to her armor flutter as she dropped onto the orcs charging up the stairs. Her power blade lashed out in perfect figures of eight, hacking orcs limb from limb as they ran at her or passed. Every part of her body moved with a minimum of effort and the maximum of effect. Grace, poise, a ballet of slaughter performed in absolute quiet but for the howls of dismembered orcs. Unnerved by their own brutish sense of the pariah in their midst, the orcs began to waver. The break in the influx of fresh combatants allowed Corlan to push onto the turn of the stair. Beaumont Blink sent a greeting rune to his helm display. two walking tanks side by side, with Relic Blade and Storm Bolter, they drove the orcs back, round the turn, and on to the final flight. Beyond Lady Brisanas, Courland saw the doors. They were large, but by the standards of neither human nor orc were they worthy of a centre of power. They were plain metal, unadorned except for a few furtively scratched glyphs in the frame. A service entrance for Gretchen and slaves. For humans. Courland wondered if it was some kind of symbolism, as much as its own desire for this confrontation that had led the beast to direct them along this route. Conquest had never been enough, or the hives of terror would have been aflame long ago. It was holy war. It wanted mankind's capitulation, its humiliation. Vulcan had explained to him that when dealing with orcs, all things came down to dominance. The Primarch had also repeatedly impressed on him the need to have faith in himself, in his brothers, in the spirit of man.
For Dawn! For Vulcan! For the Golden Throne of Terror!
Freed from the immediate fighting, the two Ogryns opened up on the uncertain orcs. Commissar Goss seared them with bolts of plasma, and Alpha 13 Jazal joined him with raking volleys of his heavier plasma caliber.
"Protect yourself, sister!" yelled Tyris
as he pulled a clutch of frag grenades from his hip holster. Gadriel and the rest of Kill Team Stalker did likewise, and Cavalinera plunged her sword into an orc's chest and then ducked beneath it as it fell. The air became metal. The frag blasts were too minor a flurry to inflict anything more than irritation on such armored behemoths, but iron shards were as pernicious as sand, and propelled with force would work their way into anywhere. They got into eyes, into ammo slits, points of weakness that the orcs could have protected had function been as important to them as effect. Humanity was not the only race with weaknesses. Courland raised his sword as an icon of man as Asger and Beaumont pushed past and battered open the doors into the Chamber of the Beast. Ulanor, Gorkagrod, Inner Palace. Penitent Roth looped over the palace rooftops like a seabird with wings full of winter gale. She swung slowly on her axis, round and round, torn electrics spitting from the hole that gaped in her wing, coming in by some miracle on one turbofan and descent thrusters. The section of roof high above the throne room of the beast was flat as a frozen lake, spiralling in panorama across Kjarvik's view. One black gunship was already down and unloaded, warriors in grey and in ivory and red spreading from it like cracks in the ice. Another burned up in the sky as it flew over, wreckage dropping over the spiked parapet in a death spiral. His vision swung from metal roof to cloudy sky and back again, both the same ruddy umber, fire and ash, one a beaten reflection of the other. Kjarvik held on to the assault ramp's hydraulic supports as centrifugal force tried to throw him out. He looked down. He felt no nausea or disorientation. His physiology was immune to that.
"It is not going to get any closer," said Balderich.
Kjarvik released his boot maglocks with a snarl. There was no need to jump. The gunship's spin flung him out from the ramp, arms beating at the air like his namesake crow. The gunship groaned as its back end swung away and its nose came back around. Kjarvik could see Aetherius and Boar through the armor glass, locked into restraint harnesses, fighting with the guide sticks. Penitent Roth whipped around on its sole functioning turbofan and swept further out. Meters from the rooftop, centimeters from the edge. Kjarvik twisted bodily and smacked face first into the roof. He rolled sideways away, bled off his momentum, and came up on all fours, with the exception of the one hand that hovered over his mag holster. The sheet metal gave a crumping wobble where his weight had depressed it. His long hair and pelt whipped about in the high-altitude wind. He sniffed. Dead orcs. Engine oil. Burning. A massive thump rumpled through the metal as Zariel impacted like a drop pod without retros. The flesh tearer crunched two-footed into the roof, right boot breaking through to the greave. Actuators and suspensors responded after a second's delay, dispersed the impact throughout his armor, plate to plate, servos whirring like dynamos as he violently kicked his leg free. Farius hit a moment later, a few meters off, then Balderich coming in on the tips of his toes with a swordsman's poise. Penitent Roth, convulsed as her rear end swept over the parapet, attitude control jets burning blue to white, hot enough to hold her shuddering in place, while 24 inquisitorial stormtroopers poured out. They held a perimeter with lasguns aimed up and out as Inquisitor Venand and her bodyguard Raznik hurriedly dropped out after them. Raznik supported Erquidex under one arm, even as he marked threat angles with his las pistol. The last few stormtroopers were following up at the end of the ramp when the Thunderhawk's last turbofan blew out. The engine housing vomited oily yellow flames and rotor shards, and the unresisted control thrusters suddenly hammered the gunship sideways. Men fell screaming, rolled across the roof like bones tossed from a cup or flailed over the edge. Others were thrown back into the troop bay or hung onto the now upside-down ramp by the fingers. Shorn of any uplift, Penitent Roth crashed into the roof, bowing it permanently, and shrieked back on thrusters until it crashed into the soaring stretch of curtain wall that rose from that side. Kjavik had memorized the cartoliths, as they all had. If they were accurate, and he remembered truthfully, then this was the south face of the palace's innermost defences, an iron ring of brute firepower and hyper-technology that defended the beast's throne room against attack from the ground and from the air. Penitent Roth's machine spirit finally expired, and she fell quiet. Steam rose from the tracked tears she had left in the roof. Smoke gouted from her blasted engine. Farius lowered his shield and ran for the downed gunship, voxing Aetherius and Bor. A few greenskins littered his path, but their threads had been well cut and hard, mown down by the Thunderhawk's anti-personnel guns, or dispatched by the Sons of Dawn. "We have located an access ramp into the palace, and from there we've luck to the throne room of the beast!" Maximus Thane's warplate boosted his voice over the thunder of flak guns and the shrapnel rain. Kjavik knew of him from the Death Watch's very first missions. He was good. He spoke plainly. Kjavik respected him enormously, and he was not alone in doing so. Half a dozen, Fist's Exemplar, and an apothecary of the Excoriators followed Thane from his Thunderhawk, Zariel and even Baldurich falling in behind the Chapter Master as he neared.
"How far?" asked Kjavik.
Thane shrugged, a whine of servos.
"Less than 200 meters.
He pointed over the fortress wall, the guns still spitting fire and energy bolts at the Death Watch gunships trying to land closer.
"Kulin's teleport coordinates are just on the other side of that." "Does his teleport homer still signal?"
"I cannot raise the fleet to find out."
"On the bright side, the beast will be distracted by Kulin and..."
Kjavik waved a gauntlet vaguely in the direction that most of the muted booms were coming from.
"And whoever it is now in charge down there, he will not be expecting us."
As he spoke, another black gunship set down on landing struts, and another, just as a Hellstrike missile from a third, whistled through the air and obliterated a gun nest, crowning the main source of flak with fire and scattering the neighbouring roofs with debris. More Death Watch deployed from their open assault ramps, black-armoured, elite, packing combi weapons and war gear for any occasion. He recognised several of the sergeants from the mission briefing. Zariel gave a twitching nod in the direction of Penitent Roth, and Kjavik looked that way. Venand walked towards them, Raznik in close beside her, crowded by black-armoured mortal troopers, reindeer displaying their antlers to a Fenrisian wolf. The Inquisitor had changed out of her grey dress suit during the flight and into the same glossy black fatigues and hardened carapace worn by her stormtroopers. She had a las pistol, but left it in its holster, content to cede her protection to the 20-plus guns of her guards.
"A neat fit," said Kjavik,
indicating her slighter frame relative to the muscular inquisitorial stormtroopers.
"I came prepared."
Raznik pushed Erquidex ahead of him. And now the Magos was close, Kjavik saw that he was pulling a small equipment cart behind him. Its wheels rattled on the bent metal roof. Lights blinked in no particular sequence, and wires flounced between what looked like a specialist vox set and the plug-in sockets in the back of Erquidex's neck. His eyes twitched randomly. He muttered a guttural alien gibberish under his breath, as though something primordial whispered in his ear. Drool trickled down his chin as he mumbled, too intent on sharing the profundity of what he heard to remember to swallow.
"What is wrong with him?"
said Baldurich, voice thick with distaste.
"He is parsing the Orc's communications for an indication of the beast's location," said Venand. When Thane told me that he could pick out the beast's voice from the palace transmissions, I was reminded of the linguistic matrix developed by Magos Laurentis to translate the beast's attempts at communication on Adamantua. Urquidex possessed the necessary cranial implants to access his language centres, and he kindly volunteered.
I am sure he did, said Kjavik. It is curious, said Urquidex, the human words forced between the brutish alien sounds that spilled from his cortex. Multiple references to beast.
His eyes were screwed shut, eyelids flickering as if in a troubled dream.
Unsure where it is. Deliberate misdirection, Thane suggested. Perhaps.
Then we split our forces, said Venan quickly. Hit them all. The Fist's Exemplar and Excoriators take half, while I and the Death Watch will take the other. If nothing else, splitting up will keep the Orcs off balance, possibly give Corland and Cavallonera a chance to deploy the Psyker.
You, said Thane. Representative, I do not believe.
Don't representative me, Maximus. You lead your men, and I intend to lead mine. Thane shot a glance at the Death Watch. There were just under 30 of them, the finest warriors from 9 different chapters, the best that Kjavik had ever fought beside.
I suppose I have little choice, said Thane.
Less than that. Now let's go.
Is one location more likely than another? Said Thane, and turned to Urquidex. Not significantly, but one is source of most.
He shuddered, jaw clenched over a truculent tra sound that apparently did not exist in the greenskin vocabulary.
Transmissions.
Then I shall take that one. Agreed? Agreed, said Venan. Assign teams and Urquidex will instruct them on where to go. Thane nodded and turned to order his men into combat squads. As soon as he was facing the other way, Venan clasped Urquidex's shoulder and, under the pretense of helping him walk, whispered something in his ear. But none of the space marines on the rooftop had keener ears than the space wolf. My team takes the most probable location. Kjavik shook his head and readied his war gear. Bad luck. It was a curse. Ulanor, Gorkogrod, Throne Room. The Orc Psyker gave a roar of supplication as the heavy draft servitors hauled the creature into the great throne room of the Orcs. Laurentis scuttled under the chain to stab another dose of sedative into its leg. It barked and tried to kick back at the Magos, but the dumb servitors dragged it inexorably forward. Signing to her sisters to close in around their charge, Cavallonera drew in behind it, raised her arm up, and placed her hand to the back of the Psyker's neck, where it joined its head. It shuddered in bleak horror, some combined effect of the paralytic in its bloodstream and the pariah gene that cored its subconscious like a frost blade to the soul. Even so, it continued to ramble and growl. It dropped to its knees as though begging forgiveness, and had to be dragged the rest of the way by its wrists. That display alone would have been enough to convince Corland that he was in the right place, but he knew this room. Cruel had described it perfectly. In the centre of the stupefyingly vast space was a circular dais, much like the centrepiece of the Great Chamber of Terror, though this example of the form was larger again, grander again. 6 enormous thrones faced outwards in a ring, so that the one immediately opposite Corland was out of view, and the one that faced him...
Stop!
He roared, and, cue to his voice command, the servitors halted. The Orc Psyker writhed on the floor.
This is the chamber, said Krul.
Behind the assassin, Alpha 13 Jazal and the Ogryns held the doors with thumps of meat and fiery blasts of plasma. Kill Team Stalker spread out, taking positions in the crop circle patterns of pits surrounding the podium that might have been analogous to rows of seating. Corland clumped forward to join Beaumond and Asger. Like him, they were staring up at the dais. Enthroned in its titanic chair was a gigantic armoured orc, nearer in size to a gargant than any common greenskin. No plate was of the same material or colour as the next, but all were threaded together with an intricate web of alien designs. Its head was bare, flesh dark green, ridged like tree bark, and swirled nightshade blue with tattoos.
Gauntlets the size of Corlin's plastron clasped the throne's arms, calloused lips and painted tusks parted in a grin. It had been waiting for them. Corlin felt a chill in his soul. With a clanking of armor, the beast rose from its throne.
"Emperor, preserve us!"
cried Commissar Goss, turning from the mob at the door and lowering his plasma pistol in horror. The Commissar was a last-minute addition. He would not have been briefed on events on the Temple Gargant of the Beast. Corlin became aware of jeering from above. He turned his faceplate to look up over his right pauldron. The walls of the throne room were stone, black and white, made of large blocks carved with orc glyphs. Scores of iron-railed galleries jutted out. They were identified with glyph plates, and a quick glance was enough to tell Corlin that there were only 6 unique pictograms in total. An iron-tusked orc on a disc of red, a red sun with an orc's face, a crooked yellow half-moon, an angular serpent, a skull crossed by bloody axes, a horned blue orc's head backed by bones. The galleries marked by that last symbol were lined with bellowing orcs. The aliens were all as big or bigger than any Corlin had yet encountered beside the beast itself. They were heavily armed and armored, their gear a dull blue bearing the blazon of the Death Skull. War machines flanked the galleries, great gargants, symbols of status as much as sentinels. Their enormous rivet iron frames boasted only the largest and most complicated weapon mounts. The paint daubed across their bodywork and the jewels that studded their armor matched the glyph art of the chamber. None were smaller than a Reaver Titan, and most were considerably larger. In some cases, the orc engineers had resorted to extending their machine outwards to outdo a rival engine. They were fortress walls on spiked tracks. Corlin's mind flashed back to Adamantua and the powerful warrior forms that had torn from the ground in swarms when their principal nests had been threatened. These orcs were their warrior forms, their daylight wall, their adeptus custodes. The mosaic floor shuddered as the beast took a step off the dais. It was titanic, 3 times Corlin's size, and Asger and Beaumont seemed to shrink in accordance with its bulk. Corlin's biology had passed far beyond the grasp of fear, but he comprehended the enormity of his task. Here was the great beast, the orc that had contested Vulcan in single combat and survived the Primarch's end. What chance did Corlin have? The beast grunted something orcish to the bound Psyker, then passed its gaze over the 3 Terminators. It settled on Corlin, the instinctual recognition of one apex beast for another. Its eyes were like red suns, caged. Its voice was the shattering of worlds.
Slaughter!